kicking off this first ever podcast edition for Pure Gravel. We are here at the world headquarters of Domination in Carlsbad, California, our secret lair, if you will. My name is Jim Miller. I'm here along with my co-host, Chris Hull. Chris.
Hello. Deep in the basement.
Yeah. Buddy, we've been on a fun ride this year. We had a really cool seat to a lot of the action going on in the gravel world, up close, firsthand. All over the country, you and I traveled different events, doing different things with different brands and covering the sport inside out. Anything stand out to you? Is any of those moments that really jump out at you as being just personally interesting or really, really compelling that made you think really good things about the whole year?
Yeah. I have been really surprised the last couple of years to see the level of talent keep going up and up and up. And it's been really fun to kind of watch the turnover in, you know, who we thought was going to win last year is not who won this year. And there's so many questions of which riders, which competitors are going to do well in this sport. And it's not always what you think. In particular, the triathletes with these big engines have been coming in and typically not doing that well. But I've been, maybe shouldn't have been surprised, but the mountain bikers who, you know, I don't really have a lot of exposure to mountain biking and don't really follow it. And these guys, they've coming in, the guys and the girls coming in and totally tearing it up. And at a lot of these events, you know, the top, you know, top people in the results, they all have mountain biking background or experience. Even going back to guys, maybe one of the reasons we shouldn't be surprised is guys like Brian McCullough. You know, he won BWR a couple of years back. Yeah. And one of the reasons he was a favorite that year was because he was one of the few guys that had motorcycle and mountain bike experience.
Yeah.
And wasn't just a pure roadie.
Yeah. Had the engine, clearly, but then also doubled down on that by amazing bike handling skills.
Yeah.
And as we've learned from a lot of these events, everyone's different. Everyone's going to require a little bit different skill set, but overriding all of that is your ability to handle your bike in tricky situations.
Yeah, for sure.
I think for me, one of the great things was we came out of the year of COVID and we tried to have a full schedule in about 6 or 7 months, and you just had this rapid weekend. It seemed almost every single weekend there was a big event, and intermixed with that, we're working on Belgian Waffle Ride and activating and running the event, but then still having to pay attention to, and in some cases cover, these other events. And you had a lot of new events jump on the calendar too, which is great. It's showing an interest level in the sport and building up a whole new side of the sport where, editorial opinion here, where, you know, USA Cycling missing the boat with growing road racing in this country. How we've got this emerging, amazing, new, fun element of the sport that's bringing people from all walks of life in. And to me, that's the really the coolest thing about all this.
Yeah. And we're here today to talk about the power rankings. And one thing that surprised me in preparing for this was I started going through all of the results for the year. And I had kind of, we were so busy at the end of the year, I had forgotten that the first half of the year was essentially canceled.
Yeah.
That our first major event was in June.
Yeah.
That everything before that, Mid-South, didn't happen, or maybe it was virtual, but there, I think it was canceled. And all of the early season events were just gone or pushed to the fall. So really it was, June to October was the season.
Yeah. We had this compacted race season and a lot of events moved their normal traditional date to a different date. And that should normalize next year. I think the calendar's already taking pretty good shape. I think everybody's kind of planted their flag, even back at their traditional period of the dates they want to be in. And then all the new dates are having to kind of shuffle in wherever there's open space. And even then, you're going to have events on top of each other on any given weekend, just because there's so many good promoters out there trying to get their piece of the pie here and get an event on the calendar.
Yep. We've had these two weird COVID years, and it feels like 2022 is going to be our first year back to see how things shake out. Because there were all these events that were right on the cusp of are they going to become a major event or not? Texas Chainring Massacre was right there before COVID. Croatan Buck 50 out on the East Coast, and Rough Road 100 in Chicago area. And there were several of them in California that were kind of this mid-sized event where they were right around 500 people. And then COVID came and they all just died.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see if riders come back to those events or if there's a new crop of events to see, you know, where the gravel world goes.
Yeah. And all those events have already kind of staked their claim. They've put their date out there. There's already been great enthusiasm about registration for a lot of these events, and spots are already being nabbed. So I guess word to the wise, if you have any intention of trying to get into some of these bigger events, register now, lock yourself in, make your reservations to travel out there and support these events, support the brands that are supporting them, because this is where the growth is in cycling, and this is where we're going to see a lot more exposure and growth and bringing new people into the sport. So that's really the good news of all this.
Yeah, I'm excited for the year. But and so the power rankings, we had this big plan that we were going to update them all year long. Every time there's a big event, we're going to update the rankings and we're going to talk about it. And then we got so depressed in the first half of the year that everything was canceled and COVID was still hanging around, and we just sort of put it on the back burner. And so now, the end of the year, we did have races happen, and so we're going to rank them. Even though a lot of races didn't happen and things changed, we're going to take what happened, take what we had, and we calculated the power rankings for 2021.
And this isn't an easy job. We had to reboot and fire up the Pure Gravel mainframe. It took a while. But there was a ton of data that had to go into this. And our game, our rules, our ball. But the important part of that is Chris did a very, very thorough job of not only breaking it down in terms of what those criteria are, but how to fairly rank and give points to every race that did qualify. So from maybe a 10,000 foot view, Chris, what were some of the things that went into the calculations of the Pure Gravel power rankings?
Okay, I'll try and keep it short. But it's important for people to know that these are not subjective rankings, that we wanted to be humble and try and take as much bias of our own bias out of it. You know, we're in California, and so if we just picked the races we know and like, we would miss a lot of stuff in other parts of the country and probably weight the California events too heavily. So we wanted to try not to do that. So we made criteria. You know, even just saying what's a gravel event is tough. And so what we came up with was it needs to be at least 50% drop bars. It needs to be at least 30% off-road. And for us to take a look at it, it needs to have at least 500 people at the event to keep a manageable size, because we don't want to be ranking 200 events.
Now, with 500 people, some of these events have multiple distances. Are we counting only the competitive distance or the longest distance?
No. So sort of. This is where it gets complicated, so stay with me. We think gravel is a populist sport, and we want the people to vote for which events matter and which events we pay attention to. And so that is the total event size. It's how many people show up. If you're there throwing a leg, pinning a number, it counts for the size of the event. And so we use that to sort out which events we're going to put into the pool to calculate. But when we actually calculate the points for the riders, we just look at the competitive field, which in some cases is different. In other cases, it's not. So an example is, oh my goodness, the one in Vermont.
Vermont Overland.
Vermont Overland.
Yeah.
They only have one distance. And so everyone that shows up for the event counts towards the weight of the event. That's, you're competing against the whole event. But at something like Unbound, we only take the people that competed in the 200, and we use that as the basis for the weight of the event. And that's really different than the total number of riders that were there.
So we tabulate all this, we grind out the results, and now we're left with a top 10 men and women. Is it time to reveal that? Are we ready to reveal that now and roll through that? Or
No, it's not.
We're going to hold off on that?
Yeah.
All right.
So we're almost there.
Okay.
But first, you should know that in 2021, there were 15 events that met our criteria.
Okay.
So there were 15 events, over 50% drop bars, over 30% off-road, and over 500 people. So that is the basis of the rankings. And then we give points to the top 15 riders at each event. So if you are in one of these large events and you're in the top 15 in the competitive field, you get points. And we ranked the points the same way they do sprints in World Tour races. So number one, 50 points. Number two, 30 points. Number three, 20, 18, 16, all the way down to 15th place gets 1 point. And then we multiply the point times the number of riders in the competitive field. So if you win a race with 1,000 people, you get twice as many points as if you win a race with only 500 people.
Were there some oddities in here? Were there some like anomalies, if you will, in the data or the event that would cause us to either include or not include a particular event?
Well, we just go by event size. We let the people vote.
Okay.
But there are some weird things, like Colorado to Utah had 850 riders, but most of them were doing the little like friendly ride. And there was only about 150 people that did the competitive.
So they qualify on the field size, but the weight of the overall score of the top 15 is going to be much lower than it would be, say, for Belgian Waffle Ride San Diego.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And the other asterisk that we should add in is that we use the numbers we have. We need to use numbers, and we don't want to adjust them or trust what any reporters say or organizers say. So we just pull the results. And the results for each race can be reported a little bit differently. And we do our best to account for DNFs, but not DNSs. So if you didn't start, we don't want to count you. If you start but don't finish, we do want to count you. And we think we're successfully able to account for that in almost every race. But there might have been one where we couldn't get, because of the way they reported the results, we couldn't get the people that did not finish. And in that case, we just have to kind of shrug our shoulders and move on, because we're going to use the numbers we've got. The other big asterisk was Belgian Waffle Ride California. They had an issue with timing and had to use a backup system. And we think that they weren't able to count every rider that was there. And so that hurt BWR California in the rankings a little bit, because we had to just use what was published, even though we know they missed some number, maybe hundreds. I don't know how many they weren't able to count.
Artificially deflated the overall weight of that race.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But we used what we got. And even so, it was still weighted the heaviest. Belgian Waffle Ride California, the full Waffle Ride was the biggest competitive field of the year, even though we don't think they counted everybody.
Okay. So we've kind of set the table for that in terms of how we're going to rank them and how we're going to look at these races. Similar format as just looking ahead to next year, we're going to do it the same way next year and calculate everything right from the start?
We need to put our brain trust together and hammer that out, but we think so, yes. We think it'll be the same way, but we're going to have to change the criteria a little bit because gravel is growing so much. We don't want to calculate 50 events.
Yeah.
We want to keep it in the, 10 to 20, 25 at the most events.
The more prestigious, the more premier events on the
calendar. Yeah. And we could just pick the events we're going to count, but we would rather that the people pick the events for us. And so we think we just need to decide what the cutoff is. Maybe the cutoff is 750 people or 1,000 people next year to keep the event size manageable.
Well, and we know too, when this becomes really big, when people really start to dial into the Pure Gravel Power Rankings, that these events are going to blow up just because of that, because they're actually included in that. We know that.
We already know that. We already have been contacted by pros that have told us that they changed their schedule from looking at the power rankings because they wanted to make sure that they were at the big events. And so they looked at the rankings.
It's the power rankings for a reason. It carries a lot of weight. All right, enough shenanigans. Let's break down the top 10 men and women. We'll go over the top, the top 10 to 5 or 10 through 6. We'll talk a little more about the 5 through 1 in each side. Let's start off with the men. Number 10, Brennan Wirtz. Great campaign for Brennan. He's a young, up-and-coming superstar in the sport. Alex Howes, World Tour rider, came on and had a fantastic campaign here in the States this year, letting him toggle that.
Finsterwald is one of those guys that I'd never heard of because I don't follow mountain biking.
Number 8, Russell Finsterwald.
He's a hard man.
He was, every time it seemed like one of the races we were covering, we were saying his name a lot. Hugo Scala Jr. Hugo, we're looking for you to do more big things next year. Ted King, an up-and-down year for Ted with some injuries.
But now, Ted, I don't want to throw any shade here, but I just keep assuming that Ted's going to get buried with all of this young talent coming in, but he keeps on performing. The guy is amazing.
Every year.
He's there.
Yeah.
That guy is got an engine and he's got longevity and he's getting it done.
And
so
running
props.
His own great event too out there.
Yeah. And his event is in the power rankings.
Yep.
But props to Ted.
All right. Number 5, Colin Strickland. We got an up close and personal with Colin on our trip to Kansas. Homeboy was camped out in his badass trailer right in our front yard, literally. We saw the inner workings of the madman the night before in his laboratory. Yeah,
building his bike
and getting his nutrition and hydration pack squared away. Didn't have a big win this year, but was there, it seemed like, every time. Had a good run at Kansas, too, at Unbound, but was still inside the top five there with that. Long-distance badass himself, John Borstelman, it seemed like every event, you're always talking about John. He was always right there. Winning Gravel Worlds a number of times, he did, no surprise. And I think we're going to see more of John in the years to come, too. There's Adam Robert. Sorry?
Number three.
Adam Robert. Top three, yeah.
On the podium.
Yeah.
New guy,
young, 24, making inroads into the gravel world after racing primarily on the road prior to that. And interesting about
that. You know how he did it?
No, tell me.
Staying hydrated.
Yes, easily one of the most hydrated athletes on the gravel tour this year. A little bit controversial too. Let's just say what it is. Bookended the year with some little bit of controversy.
Yeah.
The issue at Gravel Locos about racing through the final feed zone. He made an equipment choice. He said that to wear a Camelback and didn't need to stop. And then there was much to do about that made during and post the event. It gives us something to talk about. It helps us define these rules of gravel, which are yet still being written.
Yeah, the unwritten rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So very interesting with Adam. And we know Adam personally. He's a really nice guy. And I don't think there's any malice in his efforts. He's just out here racing really, really hard and trying to win races and make a name for himself.
Yeah. Some people don't like the way he's doing it.
Well,
so we'll see how that shakes out.
We'll see how that goes. But he certainly is no fan, or he's no stranger to just raising his hand and expecting a bottle. We're going to chalk that up to his road roots and just knowing that's what happens. So,
yeah.
How about number two, Peter Stetna?
I thought he was going to win. I thought Pete was going to win it.
Yeah.
I was surprised he came in second.
It wasn't a big split. It was a pretty close tally on the total
points. Yeah, it was close. Yeah, but Stetna is so consistent, and he's at all the big races, and he's at the front of all the big races. So he's kind of a
couple signature wins. He won the San Diego BWR, and he also won the Utah BWR, and then was Leadboat. He was right in the hunt for the lead. Won the overall at Leadboat, which is spectacular in itself.
But we don't count Leadboat. That wouldn't be pure gravel.
I understand. That's still a noteworthy accomplishment to race both of those races and do as well as he did over the course of 2 days.
We don't count those silly flat bars.
Why would they want to go up there in that altitude and ride on flat bars? It's beyond me. All right. How about our winner? Reveal our big winner for the men's power rankings, the pure gravel power rankings.
Ian Boswell,
yeah. Two huge wins. The two-up sprint against Lawrence Tendam in Kansas was amazing after 200 miles. The fact that it would come down to a two-up sprint. And then he won Belgian Waffle Ride North Carolina in very convincing fashion with his vicious attack up the last climb and distancing his competitors there. So, Ian, my man, congrats. You will win one of these lovely personalized gravel ranking or power rankings trophies that we have. We're going to send it out to you, and we're going to get you on an upcoming episode of the Pure Gravel Podcast along with a lot of these other athletes. So look forward to hearing from Ian a little closer. What I think, too, and I'll say this, was fascinating for me to watch him so close the way we did in our live coverage of the North Carolina event, was how calm and composed he was all day riding with that lead group. There was most every descent, he would kind of sit in back and tail gun off the end and was not really concerned with how well he kept up. But then on every climb, and then certainly the last one, he would just, that's where he really put those years of World Tour power and experience to work, was on the climb. And that last one, he put 30 seconds on the group inside of probably 200, 300 meters. It was that hard of an attack right out of the gate. So congrats, Ian, gravel power rankings winner for 2021.
It's also worth noting that these guys that are on the podium in the power rankings didn't just win big races. They were at a lot of races.
Yeah.
Ian Boswell was on the in the money, so to speak, at 6 power ranking events. In addition to Belgian Waffle Ride California and North Carolina, Unbound we talked about, he was second at SBT and he won Rooted Vermont and he won Vermont Overland.
Yeah.
So 4 first places and a second place, and then got some points from BWR California. And Stetna is a similar story. Stetna was in 7 events, ranked in 7 events this year. So that
consistency, you know, we're rewarding that consistency.
Yeah, placing high in the big events.
Yeah. It's one thing to go out there and dominate and kick ass. It's also to do it week in, week out too is very impressive with these guys.
Yeah. So we're going to have some interviews coming up with some of these guys when we can get them booked in their busy schedule. And also, by the time you're listening to this, you should be able to go to puregravel.com and look at the full rankings. I think we have about 165 men and women ranked, and you can go see where you ranked in the power rankings.
Sounds great. Let's move over to the women's side. Top 10 looks like this. 10th place, Emma Langley. Nice job, Emma. 9th place, Amity Rockwell. 8th place, Magali Rochette. Nice job. Maud Farrell comes in 7th. Emily Newsom in 6th. And now into our top 5. Katarina Nash
won the BWR.
Won the BWR San Diego in convincing fashion. Taking a beer at the finish line from Michael, which was kind of cool. I think too, I've heard that Katarina might be pushing more into gravel next year and toggling that line with mountain bike racing. So we expect to see a lot more of her at some upcoming races. Lindsay Stevenson takes our 4th place. Very solid campaign for Lindsay all throughout the year. And then Sophia Gomez Villafañe had a great ride in North Carolina, which I think really helped propel her up into the rankings. And I know that we're going to see more of her. She was also a big protagonist in the Unbound race back in first part of June. Mariah Wilson, great job for that young athlete. She was phenomenal. We saw an early look at her at the Cobbler early on in the season, and then she got a big win late in the year at Big Sugar. So great job for her, and I know that that young talent is we're gonna be talking about her for a long time to come. And how about our first place? Who's our overall women's power rankings winner?
Lauren DiCrescenzo.
Yeah,
and that's expected. Unlike the men, it wasn't really even close.
Right. Big points gap there.
Yeah. She had
a number of really, really big wins, which helped propel that. Would you say?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me see if I can pull that up.
She had a notable win at Steamboat.
Unbound, SBT, and Gravel Worlds. She won all of those.
Yeah.
And then she was 3rd at Crusher and the Tusher.
It was such an emotional scene, too, at the line at Unbound, in tears. You know, interestingly, that was her honeymoon. Her and her husband had just gotten married the week before. And that's where they spent their week of their honeymoon in Emporia and watched her win that event. So,
yeah. Yeah. The real surprise rider for me, though, this season was Mariah Wilson. She came onto the radar at Rock Cobbler. It's one of our local California favorites, but it's too small for the power rankings, but she won that. Mm-hmm. And I think her roommate Maud, who was also in the power rankings, got 2nd. So they went 1-2 at Cobbler. But Mariah was at 5 events this year and did really well at all of them. So she is certainly a big pick for next year.
So all you folks in the top 3, get these cool custom trophies made. You can also go like Flavor Flav and put a chain through it and wear it around your neck as an adornment to your normal everyday wear, which we would strongly recommend because these are going to be coveted awards. We're going to expect to see those on your trophy shelves and bookcases, maybe even on the mantle in the front living room because just of how coveted these awards are. So congrats to all.
Now, we already sort of talked about 2022 a little bit, but... you know, in terms of events, but can you give me like one rider to watch for you? Give me a man and a woman that there's someone to watch in 2022.
The person to watch for me is Brennan Wirtz. Okay. Powerhouse, young, hungry, humble, and is, if he gets on the right course, he can really put the hurt to people, I think. Not that San Diego wasn't the right course with him, because he was there till very, very late in that race. But of course, maybe that is maybe a little flatter, doesn't have the same sort of elevation in it, is going to be a really, I think he would have done really well at Kansas. I think he, BWR Kansas, I think he could have really made an impact on that race. But I like you on the women's side. I think Mo Wilson is one of our biggest up and coming names that we're going to see and hear a lot from in the coming years. She's got a great engine, obviously great bike handling skills. And I think we're going to be hearing about her for a long, long time to come. What about you? You got any favorites?
Yeah. Well, Adam Roberge is my young blood favorite. He made such a big splash this year, and it's going to be exciting to see what he does next year. I'm really curious to see what Sarah Sturm does next year, because she kind of wasn't on our radar this year. I don't know. I think maybe she was mountain biking, but I think she was at SBT.
She was. Yeah.
But she made such a splash in 2019.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of excited to see where she turns up in 2022.
Yeah. She's such a bright personality that we need her at every race if we can. She brings just so much to the race, and she's a great follow on social media. But you can't do it if you're the type that gets red-assed about watching fun people having great times in beautiful places, because that's all you see on her social media is just that. So
yeah, the other interesting thing will be to see if some of these some of the old guard makes a gravel push. Katarina Nash, you know, we've heard rumors maybe she's going to do some more gravel events next year. Lorenz Ten Dam. He won Unbound, and so I'd like to see what he could do at some of these other events.
Second.
Yeah, Ian, sorry.
Now, too, we've got even more of these World Tour and even U.S. Tour pros moving on from those routes and jumping fully into gravel. There's a couple of big names that we're going to see next year, too, falling out of the Pro Tour ranks.
Who you got? I keep waiting for Sagan to come over.
I would love, wouldn't that be great? Kiel Reinen, is chief among them, I think, in my mind. So many years as a domestic pro here with UHC, and then the last few, over in Europe with Trek Segafredo, and now going to come over here and go full-time gravel. I think Kiel can have a big impact on disrupting the standings of any of these big races. And then Ashton Lambie, too, has made indications that he's going to clip in and be part of the gravel scene this year.
It's going to be super fun.
Yeah. I can't wait. We've got, like I said earlier, we've got so many of these events already out there. Registration starting to fill up. What you've got now, too, is events becoming, there's more series being placed out there. Lifetime just offered up their Grand Prix.
Six events.
What's the structure of that? What's that look like?
That's going to be interesting, because you won't be able to win it as a roadie or even a gravel racer. You've got to have a really diverse skill set, because there's three mountain bike events and three gravel events, and you've got to do at least five of them. But really, if you want to win, you got to think that you're probably doing all six and dropping your weakest performance.
Yeah.
So that'll be like super interesting to watch how that shakes out. You know, Crusher and the Tusher is really different than Unbound versus, you know, Sea Otter, mountain bike marathon.
But it's application based. So does that make it in a way subjective based on the promoter's whims of who should or shouldn't be in?
Sure. But I mean, they're all going to be good riders. They're not going to, you know, like they're not going to let me in. You know what I mean? It's going to be competitive field. So I'm not worried.
You fall into that category of consistency. I'm just going to be there and plow along and do it a day in and day out.
Consistently not riding.
and then Belgian Waffle Ride announced their quadruple crown of gravel, lowest combined time over the course of the four events. I can anticipate a nice, much like the Lifetime Grand Prix, a nice cash prize coming out to scatter among the winners of the men's and women's category of that in the coming months, too.
Yeah. Gravel series seem to be a thing now.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of them. I made a little list, a quick list. There's actually, Oregon has two competing triple crowns.
Wow.
In Oregon.
Yeah.
And then there's like 15 events in this Michigan series.
Yep.
And, you know, our good friend Boyd, he's got a little six event series out on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And, Yeah, so that Grinduro, they got a big series. So series is a thing in gravel.
Well, and then those guys over in Switzerland decided to plant their flag and have indicated that there is going to be a UCI Gravel Worlds in the United States at some point in this year. We've got whispers and rumors. We don't deal in that. We'll save that for when maybe the announcements actually get made. But any thoughts or comments about the impact of the rainbow stripes becoming a part of this whole conversation of what gravel's about?
Nothing would surprise me, but I have a hunch that we're going to see a lot of pro tours from Europe coming and competing for that, and a lot of our sort of American gravel pros taking a pass.
And I think the reason for that is, and I'm just purely speculating it's here, but I think the reason for that is if the UCI gets involved, does that mean that everybody who will participate must be in the drug testing pool? So does that then make it pretty much a world tour event only, or maybe domestic pros and things like that that are already in that in the drug testing pool?
Yeah, I don't think people want to go into that system. And then they just don't want their sock height and bar flare regulated, you know?
Because if there's something they're going to regulate, they're going to try and regulate it all.
Like, you know, just people just want to ride their bikes.
Yeah. And with that, it just gets back to the heart of gravel, right? We just want to go out and have fun in a beautiful place and not have to worry about the rules and things like that. Yes, we're contending in races and we've got – those things have their rules. But with the UCI getting involved, it may lead to a whole nother set of issues. But time will tell. They've very little information is out there right now. We don't even really have a location. We don't have a time frame or anything like that.
Yeah, so we'll see. Seems like they're on the back foot on trying to figure that out. But they'll figure it out. But you know what? If gravel's for everybody, maybe it's for the UCI too.
Well, they certainly see the opportunity, and good on them for trying to take advantage of it, because, you know, we're fans. We'll watch. You know, we're going to be there and we're going to see what goes on. And, you know, there's a lot of athletes, whether they're in the pool or not, that would love to contend for that the right to wear that rainbow jersey and to call themselves a world champion. So,
sure.
Nothing wrong with that.
We already have gravel world champion in gravel, though.
Yeah. They've been calling it that for years.
It's pirate themed.
Yeah, love it. Well, man, it's been a fun year. Like I said, we had such a great view and an insight into the whole scene this year. And I know next year is only going to get better. We've already sat and kind of mapped out our pure gravel plan for next year to cover things with the pre-ride show and the other live coverage events that we can do. So we hope to be able to bring everybody just as comprehensive of coverage of the sport as we can throughout the year. I know you're looking forward to it like I am.
Yeah, it's exciting. Seems like a lot of work, but it's exciting.
We're going to kick off that coming up here just now, just a couple of months away, up to the Cobbler. We're going to go see Sam and go up to Bakersfield and have a little fun up there.
Yeah, Rock Cobbler's one of the best events that most people don't know about. It's so unique. There's really nothing like it. This is going to sound like a plug, but it's just such a great event.
No, yeah, absolutely.
It's you know, most events, you go ride your bike for 50 miles, 100 miles, 200 miles, whatever. But the kind of the way Rock Cobbler works is you ride the bike in all the wrong places. So you go on a go-kart track, you go ride through the organizer's house, you go ride on a mountain bike pump track, a BMX track, a motorcycle track, you know,
all in the same ride.
Yeah, all in the same ride. Like through a river, you go on like wall ride, snake runs.
Just you might be like taking a tequila shot at some point.
Yeah, ridiculous hike of bikes. They've had years where they throw like 100 beach balls down the hill at people while they're riding up. They've
a
had
ball pit. Ride you have to ride through pit. A ball pit. Yeah,
just like, and you don't get told what the route is until you show up at the start line, because it's secret shenanigans. And so it's really different than other events. It's super hard, and you're guaranteed that you ride your bike in a place where you, at multiple points, I'm supposed to ride through that? What am I doing here?
And you curse Sam the whole way, and then you show up and you give him a big hug at the end because he made you have so much fun.
Yeah, super fun, super unique event. So that'll probably be the first big thing on our calendar.
And we'll be out at the BWR Survival Camp.
Survival Camp is actually before that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just a full, after that, man, it just kicks into high gear, and we've got a full season of coverage and interesting podcasts and wonderful guests to treat everybody to.
Yeah, so. I think we have a major event every month until October.
Yeah. Wind it up. Get your rest in the next month or so, because it's going to get going here pretty quick. I had a lot of fun with you guys. It's been a blast. This year has been, it seems like we, as compacted as it was, it did go by really fast, but we had a lot of fun doing it, and I'm very much looking forward to 2022 already.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Thanks.
I think that's it.